Welcome back, everyone, to Movie Geek and Proud, the show where there are no guilty pleasures in film. Fuck the haters and be proud of your taste. I'm your host, Rob, with another Rob's Rewind. This is where I rewatch a film in my collection and see if it holds up. To stay on the shelf, it has to score a 4 or above out of 5, or get tossed and traded for a store credit, figuratively anyway. Let's start the show.
Manhattan is an island. By day, the population grows to over 3 million people. And every evening, three quarters of them leave the city. If you want to get off the island, you can go over the water or go under it. Tonight, however, commuters are advised to avoid the tunnel.
Welcome back, Movie G's. I am here with a Movie Geek and Proud alum. He's been on the show before. Glad to have him back. I'm here with Brad from The Cinema Guys. How's it going, Brad?
It's going well. Thank you for having me back. I feel like just one of the crew now.
Definitely. Yeah, I will usually do Rob's Rewind solo. Is just giving me more practice to do more solo reviews, but I've opened it up now to anyone who would like to do a review with me on the films that I personally own. Brad hasn't seen our movie today in a long time, so he decided to join us.
It's been a while. I haven't seen it, I think, since the theater was when is the last time I watched this movie.
Yeah, I bought this movie right away because back in the day, I was obsessed with Amy Brenneman. I just loved her from Casper, and then I've seen her on TV like a couple times, and I had like a small hetero crush on her, to be honest. It was legit. But we'll get more into that with the description of the movie and everything as to why it is part of my collection, and then at the end, we'll see if it stays on the shelf. So before we get into our movie, Brad and I are going to do a quarantine quickie.
Wear your mask.
We decided to watch a film with a similar story and plot, and it's this South Korean film called Tunnel, which can currently be seen on Amazon Prime Video.
Yes.
And it is subtitled. There's no dubbed for English, so you will have to watch this subtitled, and Brad watched it, so we're just going to give a real quick sort of thought on this movie. Brad, what'd you think of Tunnel?
Overall, I enjoyed it. I mean, I've seen quite a few Korean films since the Cinema Maiden on our show. She used to live in Korea, and she's big into like Korean culture, so we've watched quite a few Korean movies. And the big thing I've noticed about Korean movies is they kind of do different tones in them. Like, this starts out very comedic and then gets very, very serious. So you get kind of a two movies in one. I know for a normal moviegoer, that might be a little like, whoa, wait a second. Why did this change? But I'm like, it worked. And this claustrophobic man stuck in a tunnel, I thought it was very well done. It was a little long. They could have trimmed it a little bit, but overall, I enjoyed it.
Okay, yes. It is about a man on his way home to his wife and daughter. It's his daughter's birthday, and he gets stuck in this tunnel that is fairly new, and it literally just collapses on top of him. And it's a movie about survival and just your will to survive. And can this man make it? So just think Castaway, but in a tunnel.
In a tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the movie was entertaining. I did enjoy some of the humor in it. And they just kind of threw it in there out of nowhere, too. So it's something that you don't expect. And it's like, am I allowed to laugh? Because I should be feeling really bad about this man in a tunnel. Yeah, I thought it was entertaining. I did root for the guy, even though in the beginning they kind of hint that he's kind of a dick. And you're not really supposed to like him that much. But, I mean, you don't wish death on him. But it's just like, clearly he's going to go through a little bit of a metamorphosis on the value of life and you know, kindness to others and things like that. Overall, I thought it was cool. If you have Prime and it's free, I feel that this movie is an okay watch, right?
But I agree. I mean,
regret seeing it.
It deals with a lot of that, like you said, he's kind of a dick, and then you kind of are rooting for him, and then it turns into this, how far would you go to save one life?
Exactly. Yes. There is a big sort of point finger at the media and resources, the city, which is kind of like daylight in a way, too. All of that is put into effect, and how much of a human life is worth the city just stopping in its tracks and pulling all money and resources into saving single lives. So it's an interesting take on it, especially from a movie like South Korea. We know how the U.S. handles shit, but how would they handle stuff? And it's actually really interesting. So if you have access to it, I would say this is an okay watch. Okay. Well, with that being said, let's get to our feature. We are doing Daylight under Rob's Rewind. Man, this movie apparently is based on an actual event that happened. I believe it was on May 13th, 1949. It was a hazardous materials truck caught fire while passing through the Holland Tunnel, which travels under the Hudson River between Newark City and New Jersey. And one firefighter was killed and 66 civilians were injured as a result of this fire. And this movie is loosely based on those events. And this is 1996.
Very loosely.
With Sylvester Stallone. Yeah, very loosely. So, Brad, you said that you had watched it just once in the theater.
Correct.
Did you have any, like, heavy memory of it when watching it again? Did a lot of stuff kind of come back as a surprise for you?
Watching it again, I did. I was very mixed on it when I saw it in the theater. And watching it again, I was very mixed on it again. It, to me personally, it doesn't hold up. It's very 90s, for sure. It was cool to see some of these, like seeing Viggo Mortensen show up. I always love when Danielle Harris shows up in a movie. You know, being a horror fan, you got to love whenever she shows up in a movie, especially when it's not a horror movie.
Yeah. Although this is one movie that I actually didn't like Danielle Harris in. I didn't really particularly like her acting. There was a lot of lines that were given to her and her timing was just off. I don't know if it's the editing or if it was her, but I was like, Danielle, I could have done without you in this.
Well, there were a few of them. They're very cliched characters in this, you know, like a Poseidon Adventure type of tragedy of we got to try to get out of this. And there's always the whiny girl, the husband and wife that are bickering, that don't get along. It has all these cliched characters as they go along. And then Stallone, you know, the hero.
So you brought this up, so we'll touch this first off. You said that it doesn't hold up because it's very 90s. Why is it that a movie like this, or something as 90s as it is, doesn't hold up today?
The way it's filmed, because the lighting, you can tell a lot of it is very... It's a soundstage. There are scenes, especially like when the water's rushing in and that one trailer moves. I'm like, this just looks like the hydraulics ride from Universal Studios, where it's just like shifting off to one side, and then we're all of a sudden in the water world ride. And then like there was a lot of that where you're just like, yeah, this is a soundstage. This, and the lighting is just off. It doesn't feel natural.
Okay, and so stuff like that, that is very obvious, takes you out of the experience, out of the movie?
Yeah. I mean, at the time, when I'm watching this in 1996, it's the best we had right then. So I didn't look at it as closely as, say, now when I look at things. Like the explosion, when they have the big explosion that was very, very Independence Day, you know, with the flaming balls coming and everybody's ducking and like, I don't know how half the people survived that giant flaming fireball coming at them, but it's a movie, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people either had cheap cars and trucks, or they had their window down, or they just didn't think to just go down. I think the cheaper the car, the durability of the metal and whatnot towards the fire kept it out, honestly. That's what I think. True. So, I mean, given that, you know, Madeline, Amy Brenneman's character, had a shitty-ass car, I think that hunk of junk protected her from all that fire to begin with.
It's all that metal instead of, like, fiberglass and plastic.
So, this is something that I didn't know. So, the movie was filmed in Rome, actually, and I think it was due to the cost and the location. So, since Cinecittà Rome, where it was filmed, and they actually built a replica of that tunnel.
Okay.
So hardly any of that is on location. All of that is done in Rome, which I'm surprised. Usually you would just go to Toronto. But they tried to go to Europe, and Sly was like, no, I'm not going there. We're not going there. So then, like, they were just like, oh, we're going to, well, not Europe. God, I forget exactly where they were supposed to go. But he was like, no, I'm not into traveling all the way over there. And they were like, okay, well, they ended up in Rome. So, yes, it's going to be super obvious that they're using miniatures for a lot of these blasts and things like that.
Yeah. And that is the thing with older movies is now, watching them now, especially, you know, people like you and I, we watch a lot of movies. So, and when we're watching, especially older movies now, I think we can pick that stuff out more than when we watched it then.
No, I mean, I get that. And so any listeners out there who are just so gung-ho on like movies and they watch a lot, some of that stuff could throw you off. But if you are not too big on like special effects and can kind of take it as face value, I think you may sort of enjoy a lot of the action and entertainment that transpired. But that explosion, though, that whole sequence, for one, I think it was almost like 2 minutes long. That sequence is actually pretty badass.
Yeah, it was very cool. That,
yes.
And the director, Rob Cohen, I mean, people will know him from Fast and the Furious, Dragonheart, and he knows how to make an action movie. And he knows how to make a big action piece. And, you know, I'm making fun of the special effects and soundstage and stuff like that. Like, I like some ridiculous stuff. Like, Fast and the Furious is ridiculous. But, you know, that there are times where I roll with it. But this, to me, needed to seem more realistic. So when it's a little too goofy, like when the tank is rolling at them. And he's just like keeps diving in the water. Things like that just kind of take me out of it a little bit, because you're just like, oh, it's not going to work like that.
One of the biggest things that grabbed me with this movie, especially continuing to watch it and buying it, was the fact that I got an action film that didn't involve gunplay, villains.
It's true.
You know, like some terrorist attack. This is a very natural, random thing that can happen to just about anybody, which is probably why they got every single character in the book to be involved in this accident. They wanted to give you as much diversity as possible as far as like personality. So they would clash, and then it would feel more triumphant when you can get all of those different types of people to connect and help each other out and work together to escape doom, right? But one thing that I did forget was that Sly was not in the tunnel when it happened. He chose to go in there, and I completely forgot about all of that.
So I actually did too, because I was like, okay, he's driving the cab. He's going to be one of the last ones in. And they're like, no, it collapsed before he gets in. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about this.
Yes, I totally forgot about that, which I think is a nice touch, and I think it drives the story a little bit more instead of just being so like, bam, here's 11 people, and that's it for the rest of the movie. We needed to build up his story. Let me tell you what was heavy 90s that I noticed back in the day, and sometimes they do it now, but it's not as like in your face as they did it back then, is when you know who's in the movie, you know who would expect, but yet they give the main star that grand entrance, that exposure, to where like most of the time you have their back turned to you, and then they do this reveal where they like turn around and reveal it's Sly Stallone. And so he's like talking in the cab, and he's like talking, and you don't see his face in the camera, and then you know he's talking to his clients in the car, and then he turns around and it's like, I'm Sly and I'm in this movie. It was just so obvious. And I'm just like, look, Stallone, we know you're in this movie, this grand entrance, but I guess it would be a little like tacky to just have a walk on, you know, without like a grand gesture, you know?
And that's the big draw to the film, especially when it came out, is it's a Stallone action movie. People are going to come see that. I mean, that's the whole reason I went to see it, is because it's a Stallone action movie.
Sly actually wasn't the first choice. Brad, they were talking about getting Nick Cage to do this.
I did read that.
And, okay, so what do you think about the difference between that? It seems Nick Cage just gets shafted over a lot of stuff. He was almost Superman, and now he could have been this amazing, you know, chief of police to save, you know, some people. Do you think he would have done a good job with this?
It would have been interesting to see him in the role, because, you know, there are a few scenes where Stallone is Stallone, where it's, you know, he's going to use his muscle to get through, like, you know, there are scenes in it where like, well, this is him carrying over from when he did Cliffhanger at, you know, scenes like that. And Nicolas Cage, I don't know if he could have pulled off some of that action as well. It would have been like it would have been different for sure.
One thing that I did notice is with Stallone is that this character called for a lot of vulnerability.
Yes.
Fear, or just the possibility that he doesn't have all the answers. Because I was thinking about this and I'm like, Nick Cage, I think, is just too cool for school. And that,
well, in mid-90s Nick Cage, this would have been what, right around Leaving Las Vegas
Con
time.
Air. Yeah, Leaving Las Vegas time. And so I don't know. I think there's something about Stallone and the way that he delivers sort of drama as an attachment to action, I think was good in his favor versus Nick Cage. Because I actually was like, why couldn't Kurt Russell do this? I would have loved to have seen him do this, but if he had gone down there and tried to save all these people, it would have been done in 2 minutes. I mean, the man always has all the answers, in my opinion. There's no way I would be worried if Kurt Russell was down there helping people.
Oh, no. He would have had some good one-liners, and yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm actually cool with the fact that Sly wanted to do this, but it's funny because Stallone was like, he was given a description of this movie and he was like, look, I don't like being wet. I don't like being on sets. I don't like small spaces. I don't like the dark. Like, this movie is clearly not for me. And Cohen was like, well, look, you did Cliffhanger because you wanted to conquer your fear of heights. Yeah, I'm just giving you more fears to conquer. Come do this movie. And so I have a feeling that some of the danger in his expression that he was going through were low-key real, in addition of him also acting.
And they paid him a lot of money to do the movie, too. So,
of course. Yes, exactly.
Like what you said, one of the appeals to this movie is, like, when you see it as Stallone, you're thinking, okay, it's a Stallone action movie. He's going up against a big baddie, which I did like that it wasn't a terrorist attack or anything like that. It was a company trying to take shortcuts of getting rid of this toxic waste, and an accident happened. It wasn't like, okay, we had this stuff, now pay us $20 million or, you know, we're going to blow up more.
That whole sequence at the docks, too, that was such a 90s argument as well.
Absolutely.
He's like,
"Do you wanna
kill us?" Like, that dude was so 90s, which is not a bad thing, but it was just hilarious. Like, people don't fight like that anymore on film.
No.
It's done a little cleaner.
And then Viggo Mortensen, who is, you know, this cocky CEO of this extreme sports company, and like, you think he's going to be the big hero to save everybody, and then he's not.
Yeah. Viggo, not the Carpathian Mortensen. That's what I call him. And I completely forgot he was in this movie, too. But yeah, he plays this cocky actor who, Cohen, by the way, was actually a part of that board meeting.
Oh, was he?
He sat in and did a cameo in there. I thought that was kind of funny. Viggo's character was actually interesting because he goes in there with this so-called, you know, climbing experience. So this is right up his alley on how to solve what's going on. And it's a little bit kind of like today. We don't necessarily look towards authority figures to sort of help us through troubled times. We usually look to actors and entertainment personas and people who, you know, are in our faces more than authority figures like cops and politicians and all of that. Did you see the comfort level that this group, they were so calm and laughing with him. They even didn't mind filming him to make this like a big grand stand when they all get out. They were all so comfortable around him. And I think that some of that translates today, kind of.
They work because he's the celebrity. We see him in these extreme sports. We see him in this big grandeur that they're like, he knows what he's doing. We're going to follow him. And then everyone's kind of at ease. And then you get to Sylvester Stallone where they're like, oh, weren't you the guy that was fired and people died because of you? And then it became more tension between everybody and him.
It's just funny how, you know, a climber who is low-key an actor selling stuff has more knowledge and know-how than an actual cop who's been through this before.
But he didn't really have more knowledge because Stallone told him, don't go in there. It's unstable, Viggo, but he didn't listen.
Viggo went out like a pimp. He went out exactly how he's supposed to. And I think, you know, low key, his personality was like, I'm probably going to die doing a climb. I mean, I think that's how he ran his life. And not to say that he knew what was going to happen, but when it did, you saw that he stayed true to himself to the very end.
Yeah, when he stands there, spits the gum, and just like
he's just like done. And it's all due to the fact that you can't unhook your equipment quick enough. So that's something for somebody to go on Shark Tank with, is just develop some kind of
quick release
that you can unhook quickly. Yeah, exactly. Because he could have got out of there if he had just unhooked quick enough.
I mean, who knows if they have that now? I mean, in 1996, they obviously didn't.
Right. All right. Let's kind of go through some of these characters. What did you think about the personas and the people that were chosen for this movie?
Like I said earlier, I felt it was very, very cliched.
Now, is it cliched because of what we know now in 2021 or even back then they were even repeating a pattern?
I think even back then, I mean, you have these group that are in the correctional, I guess it's either jail or correctional facility van that crashes in there. You got like the hothead guy when Stallone comes in. He's like, I'm in charge now kind of thing. And then he turns at the end.
God,
and then,
I don't even want to start with him. Jesus Christ.
And he had Stallone's son playing one of the inmates.
Brad. Okay, so what's his name? Sage, I think his name
is?
Yes,
I believe so, yeah.
Sage Stallone. Okay, so apparently, now Cohen and Stallone will go back and forth on this, but I've heard both, is that originally Sage's character was not white. He was another person of color, which I was like, really, Cohen? All of your correctional detention people are people of color? No, that's not. So apparently they were like, oh, we should make one of these characters white. But wasn't he the sweetest one out of the bunch, though?
Of course.
Yeah, so, I mean...
I mean, aside from the... I don't remember the actor's name, who was... Because as I'm watching, I'm like, I know
Ronaldo,
him. I know him.
You're talking about Mikey?
Yeah. I was like, I know him. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, Hackers. That's what I...
He will always be Hackers to me. So there's this kid, Mikey, Rinaldi Santiago. So he plays Mikey, and he's the youngest of the correctionals. I'm going to just say that only because of how scared and shy he was. And he's mostly known for Hackers in my eyes, but he is also Dangerous Minds. And Kadeem, you know, the bigger black guy who's like, I'm in charge here, he is also in Dangerous Minds.
Oh, really? I haven't watched Dangerous.
Yeah, so they're...
Oh, yes, Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes. So those two are students in her class, which I thought was kind of cool to have them in the movie together.
That is
funny. I think he's
funny.
The one that calls him Nacho, because he gave him Nacho as his nickname in Dangerous Minds. And so, I think those are the two guys. But like, watching Mikey, yes, he was sort of the scared one, so you kind of felt sorry for him. But then, like, Sage was like the sweet one, and they were like, yeah, we should make one of these characters white. And then Stallone, you know, said, oh, my son would be great. Sage went through the whole, you know, interview, like, audition process and everything. And so he won it fair and square. I don't know if it was any ties to, you know, him being the, you know, Sly being the dad, but
I'm sure he got a little of an inside track because of that, but.
Did you feel that the movie needed correctional detention, like baddies in this?
I don't think it did, but because then you had the couple who were obviously kind of a little, their marriage was a little on the rocks, and, you know, he seemed like the bad guy at first, but then it turns out she is kind of more the bad guy. And in this, and then the daughter kind of stuck in there. And then you always have to have an older couple.
I love that older couple.
With the dog. As I'm thinking, like, the dog, why do you always have to take the dog? I love my dog, but I don't know some point.
Well, look at Tunnel. Look at Tunnel. Tunnel
yes,
has a dog, too.
Exactly.
Yes, they just do that. Well, I mean, it's a very easy way to give our characters, like, another sort of, like, sentimental
and
also a moral case of, you know, again, whose lives is more important here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you find out later why the dog, because they lost their son, it was their dog, and it, you know, they try to give a little more emotional weight to it.
Yes. So with the detention prisoners, I feel that, you know, it was a little stereotyped, but aside from that, I think that these characters were chosen because of the moral aspect of it. And a real big scene of that is even before Sly even makes it into the tunnel to help out, the big sort of savior scene, not the biggest, but the first one that happens after the fact, is Amy Brenneman's character, who has this decision, is everybody's in trouble down there, you know, no life should be spared, but do I help people who are in prison? What are they going to do when they get out? Are they going to hurt me? And she is hesitant on helping them. And she's like, let me go and get someone to help. And, you know, Sage goes, you are the help. And there's a reason, like, why would she not help them? And so, like, that big question mark is, you know, would you help somebody who is in prison, you know?
Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way. It just got to a point after that where she's wrestling that wire, and I was like, this seems like she's wrestling a snake more than, would it really fight her? I mean, I've never tried to grab an electrical wire, so I don't know how it's going to react.
I want to say that it could be as powerful. I mean, because it's a very thick wire. It could be as powerful as, like, a water hose from a fire truck. Like, those things are actually really hard to hold on to as far as, like, pressure. I get the sort of moral aspect of it. And, you know, you're giving older people, like, they've lived full lives. Should they continue going on? You want them to slow you down? Things like that. So I kind of like that little question.
I think it's just it comes down to, when you're in a situation like that, human life is human life. We're going to try to save it regardless. Because even like George, when he gets trapped under the rocks and the water's rising, they do anything and everything to try to save him, even if it is kind of, you know, all for naught, ultimately.
Wasn't that an amazing moment? I was so touched because Sly was at his wit's end. Like, he couldn't get anybody to, like, listen to him and agree. Yeah. And he now has to deal with this guy who's stuck under a car, and he's the only one that feels has the authority to try and do anything remotely savior-wise. And he's trying to have him breathe through a tube, and he doesn't lose all hope, but it's just like, what do I do? And then finally, it was time for these people to put up and put their into this and you know, start helping. You know, not just stand there waiting for answers just because they're civilians. I love that part. I thought that was really good. And to do it for Joe, because, like, he's an amazing actor. Stan Shaw, who plays this tunnel guard, and he's just the most lovable cop ever.
He is, but, and it also, there is a lot of scenes where they try to really lay heavily on the emotion, you know, especially with him. And he has the girl that, from what you get, is they're in a relationship, but it's not known to everybody. It's like they're trying to keep it a secret kind of thing. And he's upset that he never said anything to her or brought it out more. And now, you know, he doesn't get that chance.
Do you feel that this movie force-fed you emotions to feel, or did you actually come to those likes and dislikes, these likes and dislikes of people on your own?
I think there were times where it definitely, like, threw it at you, where it's like, okay, here it is. This is what you need to do. You need to feel for this person right here. Here it is. We're going to do this, or you're going to hate this person. But I just think that's the style of the movie that it is. I mean, it's not going to, you know, win an Oscar or anything like that. So
the last person I kind of want to highlight just to have their own segment is Amy Brenneman's character, Madeline. So they depict her life to be the shittiest of all shit lives in New York. I mean, in the 90s, like, you either were rich or you weren't. And if you were not, you lived like a homeless person, even though you had a roof over your head. So this woman is given a relationship with a married man who, by the way, on the voicemail, when he's like, give me more time or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And then his family's in the background. That's also Cohen. So that's his voice on the voicemail. But Brenneman actually dated a married man named David, which is a reason why that character was invented for her character.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So in real life, she actually had an affair with a married man named David, is what she said.
She's like, I got this.
Yeah. But she lives in this crappy, crappy apartment with roaches and literal rats in her apartment. Yeah. And she's chilling like it's nothing. Like, do you feel that her life needed to be that shitty? Was that too much overkill for us to, I guess, because to me, it seemed like she needed a reason to continue fighting and, like, not give up on life. And so they brought her down to a rock bottom for her to, like, want to live. Like, but do you think it was overkill or just right?
Honestly, like, I didn't look at it as, like, overkill for any character. I just saw it as, I don't want to go back to the cliched, but you always, in a disaster, these are the type of characters you see in any kind of disaster type of film, is you're going to have, you know, she's down on her luck, and she's going to have a hopeful moment that brings her back up in the end. You just know it's going to happen. And it does. So,
yeah. So with that being said, though, did you happen to find, well, I mean, of course you've seen it, but just kind of watching it, and maybe with the mindset of, oh, this is a first time watcher, you know, if you were to show this movie to somebody, did you find any of the deaths, any of the people who did die, to be unpredictable? Like, when you're writing a film like this, how do you choose which life should live and which should die? You know, is it based on character likeness, maybe growth? Like, did you find any of that to be unpredictable, or was the deaths that they've chosen also cliched?
I think some of them were, especially, you know, like the big inmate guy who's, you know, I'm the boss. And then he die, you know, when he's dying and kind of turning around and he's like, you know, I'll tell your dad or your parents that you were good. And he's like, they won't believe you. And you're like,
yeah,
they throw that line in there to make it like, man, now it sucks that, you know, he turned things around and then no one's going to believe it.
Yeah. That whole thing, though, that whole process, like, first of all, you take out all the black people in this tunnel out within the first 10 minutes of this disaster, and I can't stand it. You've got one who's, like, the ultimate worst, quote-unquote, and then you have this lovable cop who, they should have just let him drown, because I think the way that he went out the second time, yeah, his second death, was, like,
it was probably worse.
Way worse. Way worse. He was already halfway done. They should have just let him go, because the way it happened before, but it goes into that whole like savior complex that is attached onto people of color characters. You know, they're always sacrificial lambs to make sure everybody else makes it okay. Yeah. Cause I'd have been like, I don't care if my back's broken. You gonna carry me everywhere we need to go until I literally die trying. You're not gonna leave me anywhere. It's just so easy for us to be like, go without me. I'll just die.
There always has to be that character of, you know, go save yourselves. I got this. Like, I'll be okay. Just go.
And we don't even get a final death with him. He's just left there. And we're to assume he just slowly, I mean, that is some scary shit. And it just happened to the worst person for it to happen to. And I just was like, why? But like Kadeem with his, like, I'm in charge, you know, like, first of all, why do you want to be in charge? That's another thing that I didn't understand. I would want to do the least work possible.
I think at that point,
who didn't give a shit.
I think at that point it was Viggo Mortensen, because Viggo Mortensen was still alive, and he was amped up with him of, you know, who's this guy that's coming in when we have our big star guy? I'm going to step up to him to be like,
that's fair,
to try to put him down.
So when he's carrying that cement block over Sage's head, is he pissed that he tried to run in the tunnel and go with Viggo and leave them down there? Was he, because I tried to catch the phrase, he was like, you betrayed me, or you left me, or I don't know, he said something and he looked like he was going to throw a rock onto him, and I was like, why, what did he do? And I can only assume that he's like, peace out, I'm going to leave you down here with everybody else. But I didn't get that, and they just kind of gave him a reason to be killed, and that just sucks.
That's the problem with especially movies in the 90s is, you know, movies nowadays, they try to write characters a little more to where it's always been the joke of, oh, there's black people in this movie, we're just going to kill them. And
yeah,
it sucks. It's terrible, but that's I don't know why. That's just what they do.
Thank you for the opportunity, though.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're going to make one of them very stereotype. We're going to make him a prisoner with a hothead attitude. And then you go the complete opposite. You're like the security guy, the cop that does everything right, who's super sweet. And then, oh, we're going to kill him too.
Yep. Still too late.
Come on.
No. Cheating fathers deserve to live.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, because he has a family and we have to preserve that, you know.
Even if it's a broken home, we still,
right? Yeah, exactly. I really did enjoy sort of the mixed friendships that were developing. Did you notice that they were pairing off people that would remotely never speak to each other if they just walked across the street? So like Mikey was sort of like that surrogate son, because him and that older gentleman started to like connect with each other. Mm-hmm. And like, even when the dog needed to be saved and he was like, shut up, don't talk about him because he's cool. It just seemed that those two were so tight, because when they're coming out of the tunnel after, you know, escaping, you know, whatever, and he makes sure that he gets out. And I just like that connection. But then like Brenneman had her moment with the other girl who was in prison because she had that fear of rats, and they were sort of connecting. and stuff. And, you know, she gave the mom a big hug at the end. She was like, I got you, girl. And so it was actually interesting to see that. But I was very curious, like, if they all stayed in touch afterwards or did they just go their separate ways? They just kind of ended their story.
You want a where are they now? Can we get Daylight 2 just to see where they are?
I was invested with these characters. I couldn't help it.
Can we bring them up on a Zoom meeting now and just gonna see how they're doing?
Oh, Brad, didn't you love that this Jesus will set you free moment by the solution and the way out was behind
The cross.
On a cross? Didn't you love that? Now, that was a 90s thing for sure. Yeah.
Well, and then even after that, at the end, Stallone with his one-liner, there's that wall of mud, and he's like, I found your heart, and he just like jams the explosive in there. I just started rolling laughing so hard when he did that.
That was a very out of character one-liner that I didn't expect to happen, but this movie got very metaphoric for sure. I mean, one of the things Cohen wanted to do was sort of give the tunnel the sort of label of villain, and that it did have a mind of its own.
Yeah.
It was like like they were being swallowed whole by this creature. And, you know, his words were, the rest of the movie is the tunnel digesting these people. And it was just them trying to make their way out. And so by giving this tunnel a heart, it makes it more of like me against you sort of thing.
And when they got out, when it shot them up into the river, Felt like the boats really converged on them very quickly. Like they were just hanging out there waiting for them.
I don't know if they were just like, they saw this geyser. And yeah, they were out there really quick. Or maybe they were just in a part of the river that already had people out
maybe.
There. But there were a lot of law enforcement that was ready to scoop them up. How far do you think you would have made it through this movie, being you today? Because there were stages. There was, you know, the blow up of the tunnel. Then they had to block it. Then came the water. Then came the rats. Then they had to swim underwater. Like,
I think I would have gotten to the swimming underwater, I think, is what would have broke me.
Yeah, me too. And it didn't seem that they had to swim a long time. But that was a very dangerous, like, because there was a body of water where there was no sort of like air, like you had to go all the way through or you were going to get it.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have made it through that part either. I think that part really got me.
I don't think so either. I think anytime I see a movie and they got to make some deep swim to somewhere else, I'm like, yeah, this is where I'm done for.
So one of my favorite scenes in this, I think, is the fan sequence.
Oh, where he's timing it to go through? Yeah.
I thought that was a great sequence. What'd you think about that?
I thought it was... I started at that point looking at like, oh, these are levels in a video game.
Exactly. I thought video game.
Okay. I'm just like, you just gotta time it to the certain point and go. It's like... those games, you got to find the pattern.
It definitely felt like video game. I enjoyed the sort of turn of the camera as it was sort of a first person view of him not only having to look at where he's supposed to kind of go through each van, mm-hmm. but he had to continue to watch the clock and see how much time he had. And the way that they were kind of pacing past it, I thought was a very great sequence to kind of put us in there.
Yeah, it was. I did enjoy it. Like, there were, overall, I may be very mixed on the movie, but there were a lot of pieces of it that I'm like, I liked this, I liked this, I liked this, but just kind of mixed overall.
So what about Sly's sort of backstory, this whole thing about him on a job, he goes into a building that he believes could have people in it, but then come to find out that him and his team went in for nothing and ended up losing three guys. And so he loses his job because he took the risk of if people are in there, they're going to want help. Like, I don't think you should lose your job over that just because.
No, especially
it was unpredictable for him to, you know, how do you to know that?
Especially being a, you know, the position that he's in. It's you at some point when they're, you have to take a risk on some things and hope for the best. Like even in this whole rescue, like he has multiple times, he's got to take a risk and hope they make it, you know, continue on. It's just, it's part of his job, what he does.
So he's not even on payroll, people. He literally chose to go in and save these people's lives is because he has experience in it, but he's not on the payroll. He's not the chief. He has no authority. They just give it to him because they made every other cop in this movie just completely abysmal. Like, they were just horrible at their jobs.
They and killed off the other chief that
do something.
Killed off the chief that took over his job because he was an idiot.
Yeah, he made a mistake too. And so he done this out of the kind of his heart. But then, like, I want to ask you, Brad, do you think that he sort of was on this sort of like suicide watch to where he was like, I'm going to go in and help these people. I honestly don't care if I make it out of this alive.
I don't know if it was a suicide watch. I just think it's what he always knew. I mean, being an EMS, like, it's kind of wired in him to, like, I'm going to go to the danger to save as many people as I can. It's just what he knows. Because I got this feeling that he wasn't away from the job that long. Like, it hadn't been that long since he'd been fired. Like, it seems like it was very recently.
It's probably still fresh in his head. There were just a lot, not a lot, but there were just moments in this movie where he obviously was on a redemption track. Like, he clearly wanted to do this to sort of make amends about what happened before. Somebody close to him and a relative of theirs had died in his previous accident, so he kind of wanted to make up for it. But there were lines where he was just like, go without me, the hell with me, and blah blah. It just seemed like he didn't really value his life too much, but wanted to do what he could to save them. And not to say he would have stayed behind and just be like, I'm going to die, but he really didn't care what happened to him as well.
Yeah. And I think there were, especially a little at the beginning, he's in there to save people. But then it got to a point where I think in the back of his mind, how much of a risk do I want to take? Because I don't want to lose anybody. The only other thing that I noticed watching it is he kept taking his vest off and then putting it back. And then next scene, he would have it on again. I'm like, you just took it off and left it in the water. Why not just leave it on? Why
do
you
gotta
keep taking it off?
I think maybe to flex more muscle.
Maybe.
And it was just getting in the way. He didn't need it. Well, that walkie-talkie got caught on the fan. I would think in certain situations, that's the last thing I want. I don't want things getting caught. And then I got to carry my backpack again and carry all the equipment.
Well, then if you don't want it, don't put it back on, though.
I know, right? That was interesting.
That's the only other thing I noticed.
So, you know what was also kind of cool and a little different than what you're used to seeing is that it wasn't like a clear cut, like Brenneman's character and Stallone were going to get together at the end. You know, I look at a movie like Speed, and when they're in some kind of like high octane situation, it brings people together and yada yada. And clear there was an attraction. But this movie didn't need a love story to drive us to like these people and want them to live.
Yeah.
They're just basic people that wanted to help each other, you know? And I actually like that they veered off the cliche of like pairing them up. Towards the end. I mean, it's a little ambiguous. They looked like they were kind of flirting, but it wasn't like, oh, you know, let's hit each other up after this is over.
They didn't have the big moment of like an embrace right before the, you know, the explosion to get shot up of, you know, an embrace and a big kiss or a line to be. Yeah, they didn't have that, which I did appreciate.
Yeah. So overall, Brett, what do you think? You said this movie's a bit dated because it's very 90s. Do you think there is an audience for this? Did you think the action sequences were okay for people today to check out for the first time?
Oh, I absolutely do. Especially there is definitely an audience for Stallone movies. And this type of action movie, I mean, these are the type of movies that appealed to me. You know, that's the whole reason I went to the theater to see it when it came out in 96, because these are the type of movies that appealed. You had Stallone and Schwarzenegger and, you know, a Die Hard movie and, you know, your big action stars. So there's definitely fans of this, as, you know, proved that you own it and you were like, hey, I'm going to do this movie. And I'm like, I haven't watched it in a long time. I love Stallone. I could use a rewatch.
Yeah, I also think that there are people that can appreciate this action film. I, you know, there are people who will go to like Armageddon and Con Air, and I think there's a lot of heavy blockbuster and Hollywood appeal to this. This one's a little bit like under the radar.
Yeah.
And you really have to be a, not a heavy Stallone fan, but enjoy seeing him on screen, because it, you know, there were a lot of action movies back in the 90s, and you could take your pick on which one you gravitated to. But I think for a Stallone film, this was actually a good one. And I did enjoy the character that was created for him, too. So, but the action, I think, is still relevant, especially with sort of the camaraderie of the people who had to get together to help each other out. I thought that was still cool.
And it wasn't your typical Stallone-type movie. It wasn't your Rambo or your, you know, cliffhanger or any of those like action set pieces that he did. Yes, it was an action movie, but it was slightly different. They gave him a little more character, a little more heart, a little more background to him than, you know, other films of his that come out previously.
Yeah. So with that being said, Brad, what does this rewatch give the movie? What do you rate it?
Out of 5?
Anything.
Or?
You rate how you usually do on your show.
Yeah, we usually do out of 5. I'd probably kind of middle of the road. I'd give it a 3.
It's a 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe there is some rewatchability in it. Yes, it's very dated, very 90s, but it was still enjoyable.
I, with a little bit of the acting, very questionable, you know, not cheesy, but again, there were just some lines that just were not delivered very well, that I kind of just laughed at. And again, added on to the cliche characters that were given, some of that acting was very projected. J.O. Sanders, you know, the big chin himself, man, he was casted perfectly because they wanted somebody like in stature to kind of like go toe-to-toe verbally with Stallone, but not so much. And while he did come off as the dick of the movie, he really did it because he really wanted to, you know, like protect his family. And he had a really good moment when he made it out of the tunnel, but he did that whole like, what was that Tom Hanks movie, Captain something, when he was on the boat and taken hostage?
Oh,
I forget. The
Captain Phillips.
Yes. And just that whole like, I'm not out yet, like he still doesn't feel like he's been saved. You know, he's looking at the hole and he's like, you know, I was in there and like, am I out? You know, he just had that moment where he couldn't be touched. Like, don't touch, you know, like he was in it still.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I like that because he wasn't just like a hothead asshole who was just constantly like, you're nothing and you're not going to help us. He's human too. So, I mean, I thought that was good, but some of the other acting was like, okay. I do fully recommend this, actually. I think anyone could watch this. I'm not saying everybody would walk out and be like, oh, this is great, but I don't think people would look at this and be like, no, thank you. I mean, they're into action movies. I think this movie does a justice, and it definitely brings something different than what you usually see. And so I'm actually giving it a full-on 4.
All right.
Because I also think the rewatchability factor, like this isn't like an annual watch or whatever, but like if I saw this on TV, I would stop and watch it. And I have no problem rewatching this with friends. And do I need to own this movie? Only because you can't find it anywhere else as far as streaming wise. This movie is too like underrated and unknown for it to just be widely released somewhere for free. So I'm actually proud of the fact that I still own it. So I'm giving it a 4. But like, yeah, some of the acting, a little bit of the writing is a bit cliched. I docked it down a little bit for that. But I was still engaged. Did you find yourself bored at all watching it?
No, I never found myself bored. If you go in and you're like, you kind of know what you're going to get from a mid-90s Stallone movie for the most part. So, I mean, it has some differences to that, but...
And the effects could have been worse. It could have been
worse. True.
I've
true.
Seen
it
worse
could've.
In the 90s.
Oh, yes.
And I think they did an okay job for this one, for sure.
I mean, you and I went through all the Leprechaun movies. We've seen worse.
Exactly. So it turns out that this movie is still going to stay on the shelf. This got a 4 or above. So I'm keeping this on the shelf. I'm not getting rid of it. And yeah, I don't regret this. Check out the movie. I think that you guys may enjoy it and, you know, see Sly in his, you know, muscle days take on a tunnel. Now, as far as how factual all of that nature and element stuff that went down, this is not the show. You're going to have to go to a different podcast for all that. I'm taking it at face value, and I had a lot of fun with this. And Brad, thank you for helping me review this movie. Hopefully you had a lot of fun with that rewatch and in this episode. We're going to come back with another episode in 2 weeks, so just look out for that. And yeah, Brad, thanks.
Yep, thank you for having me. It's always a joy coming on talking with you.
Very good, very good. All right, you know what I'm about to say. There are no such thing as guilty pleasures. Fuck those haters and enjoy your taste and be proud of your taste in film. This is Movie Geek and Proud.